Hello and welcome into another episode of Podcast 63 here with Buck and Lou. This is the podcast for the city champs, our loyal Ramblers, beating DePaul this last week. I just want to get it out there real quick, real early, because it's a big deal, okay? This is the official podcast of both the city champs and the state champs, because, Illinois will never play us again after we beat them in the tournament. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. This week, we're back and we are going to talk about our two games. We have a conference game to talk about. We have the DePaul game to talk about. And there's some Valley stuff happening as well. A few pieces of important player news. And then we'll just kind of quickly run through how the first week, or the first game, I should say, of Valley play ended up. So, Lou, I know you're extremely pumped and hyped and all that good stuff, but what's on your mind? How you doing this week?
Yeah, no, I think we had a fantastic week. Again, Saturday, I think I even joked to you, I nearly forgot we had two games. nothing to discredit Indiana State or anything. I think just Saturday took so much out of me. It was weird being in such a claustrophobic entrance of an arena and not up in the rafters. But again, it was exciting to see so many fans. And I do give credit for the first time to DePaul fans. It was nice to see them as well kind of start packing a large arena for a city classic. So excited, but very excited for the finishing off non-conference and to talk about what we just had with our first conference game.
Yeah, I did underestimate the amount of DePaul fans, unfortunately. I did say 7 in the last podcast, and I have to apologize. It was 70. There were 70 DePaul fans there. So props to those other ones that came out. But in all honesty, it's going to be a fun episode. We are excited to talk about everything there is to talk about. So stay tuned, and don't forget, always remember, go Blairs.
He jumps. He passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots. Off the rim. Brown gets it, scores. It's over! It's over! We won! We won the ball game! Biola won the ball game! Oh! We won! 60-58!
And we are back. So, let's get the Valley news up and going. So the first piece of news we have is an unfortunate one, and that is that Roman Penn, the starting point guard for Drake, is re-injured. His foot, I believe. I think he broke
same foot as last year. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, small fracture in his left foot. Same injury in February, which is just like super unfortunate. You never want to see that happen to any of our competitors. And I think even that it's like, it's within a calendar year, and usually when that kind of stuff happens, it's more serious. Not always, but like re-injuring something can also lead to bigger problems. So I don't want to say that that's the case, but that just seems to happen sometimes when it's re-injury. I don't know if I've seen officially that he's out for the year, unless you have.
I don't remember it being concluded that it was out for the year, but I just know, that personally that it was the same injury that he had last time, which again hindered him from playing in their NCAA tournament game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just says the Drake release says that small fracture will remain out until cleared by the team's medical staff. He'll be reevaluated in the upcoming weeks. I would imagine at the very least a month. And then you're talking about rehab and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to speculate too much, but it is very unfortunate and is important for the Valley as a whole. So we send our best to Roman Penn. Hopefully he can get healthy. I believe he's using his super senior year this year. So I don't know what that means for his future. I don't know if he's going to redshirt or if he will even be allowed to, or if he's going to want to go pro, but yeah, we'll just keep our eyes on it, and if any other news happens regarding that, we'll be sure to let you know. Lou, do you want to take one of the next two pieces of news that we have?
Yeah, so I think the other one we can talk about is Missouri State. Kind of just a few different things. So I think recently, I don't know if you looked at both games, but recently Isaiah Mosley only played about like 7 minutes. But coach's decision, I think you informed me. But the biggest thing was that was after, I believe, gotta give a shout out to, Wyatt Wheeler, kind of a big, I'm pretty sure Missouri State reporter. But he tweeted a while ago that Missouri State was having kind of some locker room troubles and that you had family members of players tweeting stuff, calling people like bandwagoners and saying fans were just, so all I'm saying is that there seems to be trouble going down in Dana Ford's paradise of Missouri State. So really, really interesting. They nearly pulled off, an upset to BYU the other day, only losing, I think, by like six at most. I think they were within three at some point. So I thought the team was going to be turning it back around. But just really interesting to see. Also, Dana Ford, again, thinking he would be leading this team, getting all these recruits, and just seems to be having some trouble, especially this year.
Mm-hmm. He really does. And it's just kind of been like the common theme for him and for that team is just so much talent and just can't put it together. Weren't they even like, was it the year after the Final Four or 2 years after when they were picked to win the whole thing, to win the whole conference?
Pretty sure it was the year after, because that's when that was Cade Prim's first year.
Right.
So I think, yeah, that was definitely it. And then I think that was the year they had guys from like West Virginia. Like there was a lot of transfers from big programs and just for some reason it just hasn't panned out exactly the way, I think Dana Ford has planned it. So yeah, so very interesting to see, but just some Valley news there. Just really, really kind of for a team that has some key players in Donovan Clay, Isaiah Mosley and Cade Prim, just something's going on that just doesn't seem to be going in the right direction for Missouri State.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to note also that I know Isaiah Mosley, I think both those guys were both first-team All-Valley preseason favorites for first-team, I think. No, that's 2020, 2021. Is that? Yeah. They're both first-team All-Valley-type players. So, I mean, it's just important for that sort of thing too. If Penn's going to be out for a significant portion and if Isaiah Mosley's role has changed, that could lead to him getting less playing time and, potentially putting that up in jeopardy. So just a lot to kind of follow and keep our eyes on. And we don't know if they have a lot of talent. So it's just kind of a matter of how are they going to try to put it to use and see if one of the nation's best scorers is going to get the opportunity to keep playing, really. So do you have any other thoughts on Isaiah Mosley or Missouri State?
Just tough to see.
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. Last piece of news, multiple national people tweeted out, but I think I retweeted John Rothstein. Yeah, Valpo's Kobe King has been cleared to play by the NCAA. And is going to make his debut on Tuesday. He is a transfer from Wisconsin. And I believe he had to sit out for, like, hiring an agent. I think that's what the issue was.
Yeah, I think he, like, declared but didn't. And then it was very similar to, like, some type of draft thing.
Yeah, so I kind of don't understand it. Kind of think it's a little bogus. But, you know, whatever. The NCAA just decides to enforce their rules whenever they want to and sometimes whenever they don't want to. So, anyway, Kobe King is going to be back for Valpo, making his debut on Tuesday the 7th. He's a very talented player. He averaged 10 points a game at Wisconsin. I think he had started there ever since like his freshman year. So he has a lot of talent. And like Valpo definitely needs him. They are struggling a little bit. I believe they're like right around 500. I think they might be like 4-4 or 4-5. 4-5 right now. So they definitely need him and, it'll be interesting. I really think that fifth spot is up for grabs in the Valley. After Loyola Drake, Missouri State and UNI. So I very could easily see Valpo finishing fourth or fifth with Kobe King, an effective Kobe King. So Lou, what do you think? Anything else about Kobe King or just how he might do this year?
the NCAA is a joke with that. Like, I just don't understand what hinders, what's the difference from playing the rest of 20 games versus missing the first. Like, I don't how understand how that impedes. So it's just kind of crazy to think. And then, yeah, I think that's going to really change the dynamic. They had a really good game. I think I saw against Western, Michigan. And then they put Drake to the test. So I think having Kobe King, just another guy who knows how to score and maybe at a different level with being in the Big Ten. So I'll be intrigued. Again, Valpo, has had our number recently in some years. Again, always close games. And then in the conference tournament, 2 years ago. So really excited to see a good Valpo team. Cause again, it always looks good for the Valley. But I think a team that we can definitely handle. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important for them. And we'll see how he fits into their team right now. So, other Valley stuff, we did have our first conference game this past week, which was the earliest that we've ever had a conference game. There've been other times where the Valley had conference games, I think in like earlier December, or mid December, but I believe this was the earliest one ever. And, we played Indiana State, which we'll get into a recap later, but, some of the other games, were very close. I believe SIU played Evansville and that game ended, on kind of a buzzer beater or a shot with like less than a second left. And, SIU beat Evansville. Missouri State lost to Illinois State, I believe in overtime. And then we had Drake and Valpo that was Drake won by 7. And the last one would be, Indiana State and us. And one of them is Northern Iowa and Bradley.
Yeah. So that was another buzzer beater or last second shot. Just cut through the defense of Northern Iowa and won it for Bradley there. So two kind of buzzer beaters, one OT, and then Loyola we'll talk in a bit.
If you want, I'll start off. I'll just like talk about one game maybe, and which one was the most interesting one to you, or one that was a little different than my, whatever one I take here. But or if you want to go first.
Well, I think the most interesting ones are just right off the bat, to be honest with you, if you don't mind, just we can cover both quickly, is Missouri State and Northern Iowa losing, right? I think those are just blatantly obvious of like, whoa, they lost. And then Southern is just kind of Marcus Domas just took the rock at the end of it. So yeah, I think it's an interesting Valley mix. Going into it, Illinois State, I expected to be hot garbage, so that's the game I'll talk about. But beat Missouri State again, a team we have. So we always are like, oh, Missouri State. But it just didn't pan out. Though Cage Brim did put up 27 and 12, so double double for him. Congrats. Donovan Clay not doing too great, there, 6 and 8, but Isaiah Mosley started, played all 44 minutes, so interesting there, but biggest name, just watch out for Antonio Reeves for Illinois State. He is having he had 22 points in that game. But again, then they followed up with a loss to Jackson State, so I don't know. Interesting start to Valley play, definitely there with Illinois State. You want to take you and I?
I actually want to talk about the Southern Illinois game against Evansville.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, any road win is impressive. Like, the Valley is always tough to come by when it comes to road wins. So, first of all, that's impressive. Two guys in this game, really, there's a battle between Marcus Domask and Shamar Givens. they both had crazy good games. Givens had 31, Domask had 22. Including the last second shot. They both played 38 minutes. And just like really important for their teams. I don't know if this is going to be sort of a theme this year, of these two teams, but also Southern that has almost no bench, or they just really weren't using it. They only had one guy come off the bench that played more than 7 minutes. So that's just kind of something to watch out for. With Mullins there and potentially like longevity issues with this team. And then on Evansville side, just complete lack of offense from everyone not named Givens. Newton had 8 points, but other than that, no one had more than 5. Kind of a crazy old style Valley game, 54-52. SIU was up 15 at half and almost gave it all back. Like, just kind of wild. But yeah, for me, I just thought that was impressive. And both those guys, Domask and Givens, look like early, like first team or second team All Valley type players. So, what other game do you want to talk about?
Yeah, just in the UNI game, just really, impressive that the UNI lost, I guess. I get, like, Bradley, I don't know. I think if I look at it there, I think UNI maybe just gave it to them. Really interesting. Bradley showed toughness for a team that kind of was completely way different than last year. Really interesting. But again, AJ Green put up 30 points and still lost. So kind of, wondering who might step up, besides AJ Green. And I think, Noah Carter also put up 20. So I believe I saw Noah Carter in the next game against Richmond. They, switched him to a starter. So again, being this so early and in between non-conference still, this has the potential to shake up how people do rotations. They're like, hey, we got another game against, Bradley, you and I will say, and Missouri State's going to say the same thing. So, hey, we got to look back at the table, what we did wrong, and then maybe they'll try stuff in non-conference because you at least get a second chance. So I think for you and I and Missouri State, they're going to really look back at the film and see like what went wrong, especially you and I, when you have a guy go for 30 and another guy put up 20. So really interesting there.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one we haven't talked about, but we don't need to say much about is Drake beating Valpo 73-66, same old. Although I do think that was the game. No, Roman Penn did play a full 34 minutes. So, yeah, kind of just, typical, I think, for both those two teams. Drake won at home. See if Kobe King really makes a difference for Valpo the next time they play each other. So, any other thoughts just on Valley as a whole, like for the first week?
A little crazy, but excited. That was the first night. I think you and I were sitting next to each other and be like, oh, buzzer beater. Oh, buzzer beater. Oh, OT. So a little interesting, but, excited that Valley play started.
What do you expect? It's the Valley. classic quote.
Very, very classic. Very, very.
But now the one we care most about, let's talk about Loyola and Indiana State. I will say I'm happy that we got to play a home game, the first conference game. You know, the formula, I think, of winning, conference championships is win your home games and win half your road games. And then you're at 14 or 15, wins just around there. And, you know, that's pretty tough. I guess 14 would be the number, but, it's tough to come in second place when you're winning 14 out of 18 conference games. And because of that, we got off to a good start and we're able to win against Indiana State. We did win by 12, which I think was probably a little bit lower than some people were expecting. But I mean, you got to remember too, that since we are the top team, you know, our target's on our back at all times, everyone's given their best against us, and, we need to give our best against them. And we did that and won 88-76. We were only up by one at halftime. That was an insane sequence, which we'll talk about in a second. But I think we had a really slow start. Some shots weren't going down that usually do. And I think just kind of overall turnovers. I think turnovers were a little rough out of the gate. I do think we got them in control, which was nice. A little lack of hustle, I'd say. I don't usually say that about our team, but just a little sluggish. I think they're coming back from the Bahamas. You know, maybe that island life was still there a little bit, but it was a little sluggish to start. But I think after the second half, they really kicked it into gear. We did score 49 points. Yeah, 49 points in the second half. That's pretty darn impressive. I think defense got a lot better. I think Indiana State made some tough shots, which increased their score, obviously. But yeah, I think overall it was a good game. I think it was a little bit of an eye-opener in that first half, and I think they learned not to take anyone for granted. Balu, what were your kind of like takeaways from that game just overall?
Yeah, I think at the end of the game, just quickly, I was like, this is the game I wanted before DePaul. And mm-hmm. That's how I felt after the game. Because that first half, I'm not going to deny, they were kicking us. We just didn't really look. Again, I think we've just started off really hot, and then funny enough, we started off great in the DePaul game. But in this Indiana State game, we started off pretty slow. We're just like not sure what was working. It was just I don't know. It just kind of seemed like, oh, I think we even went up, like, we put up the first 5 points, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, they can shoot, they can come back. Chris Knight got in, and then all of a sudden they tied it up, and they just went, and they went up, I think, like 11-0 run or something. Like, it felt like they just kept going and going, and then the score went back and forth, and then they would go up again, and it was like, this is new for us, right? Like, last time we had this, maybe it was Florida Gulf Coast, right? So for a game that I didn't expect to be like this, I think that was kind of good, just because it's a new Indiana State team. No Tyreek Key. Yes, they have Cooper Neese, who I'll talk in a bit. But, again, it's a team that has a new coach, new kind of tempo, new format. But they really weren't afraid to just shoot three in the beginning. And I think that's what they were trying to, like, get comfortable in. Big thing for me to notice there, again, Cooper Neese was probably the leader of the team there. I couldn't really find one guy that was, like, sticking out as the guy controlling the tempo, controlling the ball, or just taking majority of the shots. And I do think that was Cooper Neese. So, interesting, though, game overall. Again, just really excited how we end the first half with just the mentality to finish strong. And then Braden hitting that three just really invigorates and pumps up the crowd, but also just, I would love to have been in the locker room just after Braden hit that, because you saw coaches getting up there. So yeah, but there's one more point, and it's about officiating, but we'll get into that after. I want to hear what Bucks have to say about the first half, and then of course we'll talk about the second half there.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of want to take us through that last, like, minute of the first half, because I thought it was kind of I was super entertaining just in general, but. So we're down, let's see, 38-32 with, like, a minute left. I think Keith drove to the hoop, got fouled, made both free throws. The next possession, Braden got a steal on defense. Lucas made a jump shot. I think it was, like, a free throw line jumper. And there's 45 seconds left. And we're – and honestly, like, perfect amount of time, because they're going to bring it down the court and we'll still get a chance for another shot. Like, hopefully we get a stop, get another shot, and potentially tie the game. Funny enough, so Lucas makes his jump shot. The ball kind of bounces around. I think the ref kicked it by accident, or one of our guys might have kicked it. But so the clock is still running. And then they get the ball to the out-of-bounds guy, and he waits the full 5 seconds. So he inbounds it with exactly, like, 30 seconds, or, like, 29 seconds. So if they wanted to, they could have just ran out the clock. Instead, they kind of rush a shot. Cooper Neese misses a three. Huddy gets the board. Outlets it. Braden takes the ball up, hits a step back three to send us to the halftime break. The crowd goes wild. Braden's hype, like you said, coach's hype. Honestly, it's one of the loudest moments of Gentile this season. I think maybe one of the Ahir Ubak dunks might have been right up there with that, but just super fun. Just felt like a huge break in the energy. Really nice execution by everyone too. So, but yeah, just kind of more about the first half. It felt like at times, it was the Marquise and Lucas show, and everyone else was just kind of there, which is, like, not what you want, obviously, from your team. I really like, there's a couple time moments where Marquise was, like, pissed, honestly, like, with what was going on, like, team-wise, like, got kind of excited and not in a bad way, just like, hey, do your job, man. Like, why aren't you helping on defense? Why aren't you going for that rebound? Box out. Like, those sort of things. And it's just something I haven't really seen from him, and I really enjoy that. He should be that. He should be a vocal leader, because that's a dude who gives 100% all the time. So I really like to see that from him. A little bit of fire, a little bit of passion. Made me pretty excited. And Lucas, man. I mean, Lucas just had such a great game. This is the next step for Lucas. Like, we talked about it in the offseason. It's going from these 8, 10, 11-point games to every once in a while, every other game, having a 20-point outing. That's a big deal. Like, that's a big development for Lucas. 4-for-7 from 3, 4-for-5 from the line, 5 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals, 3 block shots. Man, those block shots are fun. Yeah, I mean, just lots of good things to talk about from this game. And the first half, I think, was challenging for about 15 minutes, and then, you know, going into halftime was nice. So, Lou, what else you got? Or if you want to talk about those guys at all, Keese and Lucas, please, like, go ahead.
Yeah, I think for me, the first half, so that, like, the play you brought up was just, I don't know where the ref steps in, but the ball was just rolling, and the clock, of course, is just going. And the shot clock then goes off. So we set it up perfectly that we were going to have a 2-for-1, right? They, of course, brought it down. So that just bothered me. But it bothered me because I thought the refs should get involved. And, yeah, that was the story of the game, nearly. There must have been some type of game these refs were doing, because I think Drew got into it a little bit, and there were just times where it just calls just did not understand what was going on. There was, I think, a Hiruwa call where they say he hip-checked someone, but then we get no hip-check on the other end. So that was, I think, the frustrating part, and that's where I really do agree with you. It's like you saw guys like Kennedy just say, get intense, because – and Braden that hit after hitting the three. It was just a frustrating game. So when to see, like, silly mistakes on our part, and then on top of it, crappy refereeing, it was, like, just a really frustrating thing. So – but overall, into the second half, then I think was just that rejuvenating part. And something then you talked about there, how we even got buckets off free throws. Mm-hmm. Free throws was nearly the name of the game for us. It was a beautiful night for free throws. And really something then funny enough that I'm going to talk about again then in the DePaul game. But you just love to see these free throws. Like guys going, what I think I saw, yeah, Marquise getting 8-for-9. Lucas 4-for-5, Ahir 5-for-6. It was like, whoa, like 20. So we were again 83% from free throw, 9 of 10 in the first half, and then 17 of 21. So that second half, what did we do? We drove. We were like, hey, let's get better at driving. Let's force them to foul us and just get them uncomfortable. I really do think that that's what changes the mentality. And it really interesting that we said, hey, let's drive, let's try to get fouled, right? Because that's just what it is. But I think the biggest thing for me is just the lockdown defense on Cooper Neese in the second half. So Cooper Neese in the first half put up 11 of his 15 points, 5-for-10 from field goal, only 1-for-5-for-3. But again, 5-from-10 from field goal, that's a really nice game, 11 points, right? Second half, this man is 2-of-8 from field goal, 0-of-3 from 3, and only 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge difference when you take, in my opinion, we didn't take him out. Now I saw he hobbled, but no one took him out. But when I say we took him out, we took him out of the tempo. We took him out of the game, and not a guy they can go to and like, yeah, we're getting a bucket right now. And that's huge, especially if you're a team like Indiana State that's going to struggle without Tyree Key. They're going to look to have a guy in Cooper Neese. And I just think Cooper didn't really get to step up as much as he thought he was in the second half. So I tip my cap to that and the free throws. Those are things I just didn't expect to see. I really thought I'd see Cooper Neese go off, and I really thought I'd never see a day when I saw us over 80% from free throw. But, again, I loved it. Loved just kind of the mentality to keep pushing. Again, kind of back and forth a little bit, but, again, the key is that we then just kind of pulled away, and I think we just then realized, hey, this is how we can play Rambler basketball, because they tied it up at one point. It was 54-54. And then I really do think it wasn't until – maybe like 8 minutes left, then I saw maybe a substantial lead. I think they even got it close to 3 at one point, so maybe not even that. But it was a tough grind and tough fight, but I think it was a much-needed actual surprise for us in a way to prepare us for the DePaul game, but also put a kind of a something in our mind, being like, hey, non-conference, we still got time to play, but we got to not forget the conference around the corner, so we got to play. And I think the guys say it, play like every game is a Super Bowl, I think I've heard. Right, but mm-hmm. play every game and not let down, especially when it's a close grind like Indiana State was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a grind for sure, especially in the first half. And you know, you mentioned it, but free throws, man, like it's crazy. Like that, this game was decided on free throws, and then our defense, like you said, like if you look at the box score, like rebounds, they had 23, we had 25. Assists, we both had 12. Turnovers, they had 14, we had 13. You know, you look at like 3-point percentage, super similar, 44.5 to 43.5. Like everything is super similar except for free throws. They had 10, and they even shot a really high percentage. They were 10 of 11, but we're 26 to 31. Like that's just, you know, the sheer volume of the free throws was, I think, what did it for us. And like you mentioned, just everyone kind of doing their job. No one missing any significant amount. I was looking through the like play by play, and in the second half, there's like a portion, I think, where, Chris Knight makes like 7, 6, 2, 4, five. Yeah, 7 straight points for us, which is like kind of crazy. That's impressive. I don't really know. You know, one's off an offensive rebound. One was on a man one. One was assisted by Braden, like, and one was a jump shot. So, I think this is like a common theme, and we'll definitely talk about it in the DePaul game. Chris Knight is constantly in the right spot on offense, like constantly finds himself rolling at the right time, offensive rebounding occasionally, finds himself open underneath the basket when double teams are on the ball handler. He's just like, he really is just like a smart, I want to say extremely smart offensive player.
Well, he did go to Dartmouth, so I'd say he is somewhat extremely smart, but yes, I see what you're saying, yeah.
He knows a thing or two.
Exactly.
And, you know, this isn't the right time and place to talk about it, but I do think Chris Knight needs to figure some stuff out defensively, especially defensive rebounding.
We will get into that, don't worry. We will
yes.
in the DePaul game. But, yeah, no, I you know what, I do tip my cap. I think you're absolutely right. Offensively, he really, really knows where to be, the time and place to put up buckets. And again, he's doing stuff. And again, I remember the open practice, not to be side note here, but we saw him make a three, right? And you and I were like, oh, he can make a three. And I don't mind that I don't even think he's really taken a three. He might have taken one so far, but I love him more down low because he's quick. He's smart. He knows when to put up the bucket. So I really do like him down low. And there was a play in the DePaul game, which I don't think people will really forget. But Chris Knight, 5 for 5. Really just in the game is just amazing. And then another guy I think just played a great second half was Ahir, right? Mm-hmm. Ahir got to the line, put up 9 of his 10 points. And again, for a guy who started off really hot, I don't mind this game not being him the leading scorer, right? But he got to the line, and I think another indication of the DePaul game, which is just so great because you see some parallels, right, of a second half team, and that's something that's really interesting. So, but again, I also have to just tip my cap. Braden, perfect. I know he only took 3, right? But 3 for 3 from 3, just great to see. So 9 points was just absolutely great. So really interesting. I think just the one thing that's small there, just again, I'm not trying to be negative, but not so many assists from one guy. So not that many big of an assist night because I think we got 26 of our points from the free throw line, right? So that's right. A huge thing there. So I think that's something where it's interesting to see that I bet you if buckets went in, you would have seen assists. So, but again, I think the 26 points there alone is crucial. So I think it was a great game. I love you bringing up Chris Knight. I love the play of him and both Ahir in the second half. I think just kind of having that presence of a power forward down low and getting to the rim, I think is key.
I think two guys that, struggled a little bit in this game were Ryan Schwieger. I think he missed his first 4 threes. I know that. And most of them were pretty wide open and a couple of them were in the first half when we were really struggling to score. And that was, pretty difficult, in the first half. He did have a turnover, finished with 9 points. I believe most of those came in the last couple minutes. You know, they still count just the same, but, definitely was one that I thought struggled. And also Tate Hall, you don't see it too much, but if you kind of squint at the box score, he did have 3 turnovers. I know one for sure was a charge and, I hope that doesn't become a common theme because he did have a charge against DePaul. You know, I know he affects the game in a lot of different ways and he didn't miss any shots, which is good. He only took one and he made his 2 free throws. But you know, it's just, one of those things where those two guys for me did struggle a little bit and I'm hoping that we see him bounce back and we'll continue to talk about them in the next game. Otherwise, yeah, like you said, Braden, I thought played a pretty good game. Lucas, obviously excellent game. Marquise, I thought also played extremely well. Would love to see him have a couple more rebounds or another steal or something, but, got to the free throw line. That was huge. Ubach, great game. 3 block shots too. Just kind of throw that out there. Huddy, okay. You know, I don't have too many notes. I do like seeing 7.6 rebounds in only 17 minutes. I think that's pretty efficient. And then otherwise Chris Knight, great game. Keith off the bench, nothing in this game, but that's all right. St. Thomas played 2 minutes, did have a steal, and then chucked up a quick 3 and did not make it. So
That's kind of all from the box score. I'm trying to think if there's anything else like significant about the game or any like emotional.
Emotional. Yeah. Just horrendous refereeing. Absolutely. I don't mind no calls being called on both sides. I don't mind refereeing being aggressive. I actually do mind it. Sometimes aggressiveness can just kill the game and you don't let the plays like pan out. But when you call a blatant hip check, which again, I don't even think a here really hip checked them or anything. But when you call a blocking foul, you're like, okay, yeah, maybe you didn't slide or keep your feet with him, right? But then when it happens right after that on the exact other side and they don't call it, again, I had some words for the one referee in particular who never seemed to call any call when he was on the baseline, but the ref that was on the top of the key, he would call it. So love to see that. But I think that was something frustrating that you saw even Drew. A lot of times I saw Drew nearly just kind of show a smile or just ridiculous face. So I think that was it. And I think that fueled into the second half, to be honest with you, because I think we weren't getting the things going our way. Again, offense, we hit that three right at the end of the first half, so I really think that was crucial. So I think that nearly fueled us through that second half team.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, yeah, overall, I mean, I know I guess the other thing I kind of want to talk about was, like, rotations, and we'll talk about this more as well in the second game. No time for Tom Welch in this game, and I saw some conversation on Rambler Mania about it, and people kind of confused or upset that Tom isn't playing. He's also dealing with a hand injury. I don't know for a fact that that's why he's not playing or isn't playing as much. And, you know, people saying, like, he should be playing over Tate Hall or, you know, why is Saint getting minutes, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I understand it. Believe me, I want all the guys to play too. Like, I genuinely think they're all talented guys. But at some point, you know, we do have to narrow down the rotations a little bit. You know, I think 10 guys is kind of the max. And then once you get closer to like 8 or 9, that's kind of the sweet spot. Because people's, their minutes have to be consistent. Their roles have to be defined. Otherwise you get people who might not know they're playing that day or might not, you know, be ready for certain challenges. And honestly, like I think Tom Welch is good. But I think there's certain things that he struggles at that some of these other guys like Tate Hall excel at. Tate is a guy who can defend multiple positions. You know, he's not going to be defending your quickest guy, and he's not going to be defending your biggest guy on the court, but he can defend those other three guys for sure, effectively. I don't know that Tom can do that. I haven't seen him do that. Tate is someone who's proven that he's hit big buckets, you know, big threes, scrappy guy. And I just think at least for me right now, those guys that I want to see come off the bench are both the Ivy League transfers, Tate Hall and then Keith Clemens to spare some minutes. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I just saw it and I think it's interesting. But we talked way earlier in the season about big man minutes and Huddy and Chris Knight and Tom Welch. And I just don't know, at least at this moment, if Tom Welch is providing anything that Huddy or Chris Knight can't. And that's where I'm at with those guys. So I don't know. I know that's kind of a lot, but if you have any thoughts about it, otherwise we can move to the DePaul game.
We'll quickly kind of talk about one player, and that's Saint in the DePaul game. Tate should not be sitting over Welch, not to be rude or anything. I think not only has Tate played and deserved to be getting minutes over that, I think he's just more gritty and gets rebounds better and a little bit more physical. And I like his shot way more. I like Tate's ball game a little bit more than I like Tom's, but I do like Tom in situational when we go small, because I like him underneath the hit room. So it's all situational, but if we're talking about minutes, I don't see how Tate should get less than Tom. But I'll talk about Saint a little bit just because we did sit some playing time in the DePaul game, so I'll save that then. But interesting, I don't know if it's debate or just chat, but very interesting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and it probably will go on the whole season, I would imagine. So, yeah. But yeah, so first game of the week, Indiana State, first conference game, final score 88-76. Really great that we got to continue our winning ways, and especially against a conference opponent. So the marquee event of the week, the main event, I guess you could say, was our game, the renewal of the Red Line rivalry against DePaul Blue Demons. The last time we played them was 2012, I believe, in which we also won at DePaul. Hadn't played in 9 seasons, and that is, I am very confident the fact that it was not our choice, very much DePaul's choice. It's not class. But anyway, renewing the rivalry. I think there's a lot of hype coming into this game, and I think it was both sides too. I don't think this is one of those things where we made it out to seem bigger than it was. DePaul was very into this, and their fans were super into this as well. You know, there's a good amount of media coverage. I gotta say, you know, there's some times where I'm very hard and critical, I think, on like Chicago media for not covering our team or our teams. This was not one of those cases. There was pregame stuff, there was postgame stuff. Chicago Tribune was great. I know WGN had a couple hits on it. So I want to say that because I don't often say complimentary things when it comes to the media. So big ups to them. But back to basketball. Our Loyola Ramblers did get the victory, 68-64. You know, if you would have told me this score before the game, I'd have been like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like, that is exactly how I think it's going to go. Like, I thought it would be a close game. I thought we would win, you know, whether it's 1 point, 4 points, 7 points, like, I thought it would be around there. But if you were to tell me how it happened, I would have, like, there'd be no way. Like, we go up 23-8 and then we're down 37-31 at half. And even like in the second half, you know, like, it took us a while to get the lead back. And then we kind of held it anywhere from like 2 points to 6 points. I think at one time it might have been 7. But like, that's also impressive. That's hard to do. That's hard to do, is just like get a lead and maintain it. You know, a couple ties here and there. But especially coming down the stretch, we held a 4-point-ish lead for most of the second half. And that's impressive too. So, like I said, I the score makes sense to me. The way it happened, I wouldn't have believed you if you would have told me. So, Lou, what were your kind of overall thoughts about the game and any big takeaways?
Back-to-back games as a second-half team. Like, I know we took the lead into the first half of the into the second half of the Indiana State game, but another grind of a second-half team. Now, was I overly joyed with how we started this DePaul game? Absolutely. Did the $2 beers end up being a great thing? No. So I was at least happy with the start of the game. And then things happened. And either DePaul decided to wake up, or we're just tiring ourselves out. I didn't know what that level was, because I don't want to give DePaul too much credit. I don't want to give us too much negativity. So, like, I couldn't figure out after rewatching it where it was. But I figured out what it was, right? It was our turnovers. Our first half turnovers might have been the most horrendous I've seen, just our taking care of the ball. Now, I love Marquise Kennedy with all my – I will trust him to start, and I want him to start the rest of the year, and I want him to start the rest of his time at Loyola, right? There were just times where he would just bring the ball in and he'd just lose it, right? And that was just tough to see. Even Ryan Swieger, I'm pretty sure, dropped a few of them, right? So it was just frustrating to see just an overall – it wasn't like it was just one guy having a bad game, I guess, is that what the tough thing was. And maybe that's a good thing that, oh, it's a team effort, but that's not something you really want to think about, right, is a team having 11 turnovers in the first half. So that was just really, really tough. And I think that was the exact answer. I looked it up. They had 17 points off turnovers in the first half. Yeah, do you want to say that DePaul came back to take the lead in the first half with that being the case? I absolutely want to say that's the case. So that was just a simple, and I'm not saying it's a simple thing, but I do think that's the simple answer to what happened in our first half. Now, do I know the exact time when we started turning the ball over? No. But something I'll categorize, we had 11 turnovers in the first half, 4 in the second half. That is a completely different team. So I'm very excited about that. Those stats make me feel great. But then also just the grit, right? Lucas had a great game, 15 points, really like to see that. Ahir, second half game by Ahir, right? Can't deny that. That was a big second half game by him. Chris Knight, just found him, right? Found him, found a great spot for him. But I want to tip my cap to the defense on Javon Freeman Liberty. We knew he was their top best player, right? So we had to at least hold him. Now, David Jones found another way to score, but I'm fine with that, right? You can't have multiple guys, right? But we limited Javon Freeman Liberty, and that really excited me. Now, was I nervous as hell to see Kennedy guarding him and not Lucas? Absolutely. Best defender on our team and best defender in the nation is Lucas Williamson. But you got to shake things up. You got to have different guys on him. And I was really excited by that. And the biggest thing overall is, yes, Javon Freeman, Liberty, he did foul out and tough, I guess, on him, but great to see. Should have gone back to Valpo, but he scored all his points in the first half and that's it. So that's huge. I'm really excited by that. I just love the defensive effort and not to give up. I think you talked about it. These guys just like, just kept determined to be that second half team and to hold those leads. That's hard. Not only are you trying to score, but you're also trying to stop them. So it's, mm-hmm. it's really tough. But I think overall, it's the, for me, it's the turnovers in the first half and it's the lockdown of offense and defensive. We're not going to turn the ball over like that. And we're going to be smart and kind of like a, we're going to be a little doctor. We're going to play and find the holes and fit in well where we can. And I really liked our second half a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, that second half was just lots of fun for a lot of different reasons. People were hitting shots. Like you said, defense stepped up. I think the turnovers were pretty limited, except that there was a couple with like under 2 minutes left that were pretty nerve wracking and I think avoidable. But, I actually have a random question. Are you looking at the Loyola box score from this game?
Yes.
Give a follow up. Okay. How many assists does it say that Lucas had?
Two.
Okay. So if you go by the play by play, and in the second half, like that dunk that Chris Knight had, that full court pass, yeah. I'm looking at it and it says it was assisted by Ugwuok. And I even just like looked at the YouTube video.
Oh yeah. No, that was Lucas.
100%
because,
from Lucas.
Because though. Braden nearly turned it over, in the backcourt and then tossed it to, Lucas and Lucas just chucked it up. So no, it was absolutely Lucas. So
I just thought it was funny. So I mean, we should honestly write into ESPN and be like, hey, Lucas deserves another assist. But that what that kind of say to me is just like Lucas just had an incredible game. I mean, in a lot of different ways, and you know, some of them don't necessarily show up in the stat book. But you know, he had 15 points to lead the team. And he had 5 rebounds and 3 assists, and 3 steals, only had 2 turnovers, only had 1 foul, especially in a game where there was kind of a lot of fouls called, I felt, for Lucas. Lucas didn't even get his first foul until like 5 minutes ago or something like that. So for him to like really be out of foul trouble is huge. So props to him for that. Got to talk about his one steal on Javon Freeman Liberty. I don't know if they like credit him for a steal for that because he played tough defense. I think there was a screen and Freeman Liberty had to back up out of the screen because they doubled him and Lucas just swats the ball, hits off his leg, dives. They both dive for the ball. He hits off his leg, goes out of bounds off Freeman Liberty, Loyola ball, and just classic Lucas Williamson. Hyped as shit, just like screaming all up and down the court. Just, oh, it's like those are the plays that like, that's why he's my favorite basketball player on Loyola. But, like I said, like just plays like that where, you know, it doesn't necessarily show how huge it was in the box score. But just playing clutch defense, I think all night. He did play, I think, what, 34 minutes, I think is what, yeah, 34 minutes, led the team. So for me, I mean, you know, it's kind of obvious, but Lucas was definitely the player of the game. We mentioned, I know you mentioned the last about Indiana State, but in this game, again, Ugwuok just clutch second half. Especially, he didn't really have a great first half. Like, not that he.
Oh, no. He, I think, had 1 point in the first half, or maybe not even. I actually don't even think he had a point. I need to look. But yeah,
I don't
think
he did.
Yeah, no, I don't think he did either, because if I'm, yeah, I'm pretty sure he didn't. But the biggest thing with me about Ahir, and I think that just shocked me, he faked so many threes. And yeah. I was like, whoa, I just expected him to try to take one. And he was just being smart. Now, the play where he went baseline and kind of floated wasn't an and one. That was blatantly some type of armbar foul. That was ridiculous that he didn't get the and one there. But he was just being smart and said, I want to drive and get closer. And he just was like, yeah. And then he got to the free throw line. Ahir Ugwuok, ladies and gentlemen, was 6 of 6 from the free throw line. 6 of 6. Love that. And I got to just say, you want to know how funny it is that he went 6 of 6? We got Ryan Big Bro Speaker going 0 for 2. Now, do I say it's just funny? Yes. But you hear Ugar going 6 of 6 is just something magical. Would we have said that maybe 2.5 years ago? I don't think so. But, again, I think that just shows you the improvement there. But that second-half mentality, I wonder if it was Drew. I would love to know what switched that up for, like, hey, guys, I want to see more driving. Because even Ryan went to drive. Now, Ryan had not that great of a game, but he went to drive more. He did have a crazy three that I didn't like it at all, but it went in. And congrats, I was 1 of 3, but I still didn't like it. So stuff like that. But, yeah, I think someone, though – oh, sorry, unless you – but I want to talk. I want to get your opinion on Marquise Kennedy.
Yeah, okay. I just want to finish up on Ryan real quick. I do have to say, he was 15 of 15 before he missed his 2 free throws. So I really think this is going to be a blip on the radar. I hope he hits his next 15. But
no, and I appreciate that. No, that brings in some new, like, I didn't know that. So that's great. And you've been great with that, especially even like Chris Knight. I think I remember you telling me, like, the first missed field goal that he had.
Yeah, it was in, like, game 5 or something.
Exactly.
Game 4,
and then, so. Yeah. So, but I think someone that personally, I think, is, yes, he wasn't maybe, yeah, okay, Lucas definitely gets player of the game, right? But someone that I think, even though the box score might not really show it or whatever, but I think Marquise Kennedy really, really held kind of some of the team's effort together. I know he only had 5 points and he only was 2 of 5, but he had 7 rebounds and he was defending Javon Freeman Liberty. Now he also nearly fouled out. Like that's how. And now, again, do I think a handful of his fouls were ridiculous? Absolutely. Now, do I also think he gave himself at least 2 turnovers in the – 2 of his 3 turnovers in the first half were just him trying to find something. And he was just forcing himself to get to the rim. And he just couldn't keep the ball on him. And that was just tough, right? Totally get that. But I think his play – and even Braden, right? Both of their efforts, even though maybe not offensively was great – they do things that are just really different, and I think Kennedy getting the 7 rebounds is just crazy, right? He's our leading rebounder that game, and I don't think it should be him, but I'm fine with him doing it. There are just other guys who we'll talk about that just don't step up to rebound, but he is there to grab the boards, which I love to see, absolutely love to see.
I think one of the things that kind of shocked me this game was how different the team looked offensively with Marquise on the court and with him off the court. And some of these like bigger teams, it's going to be really difficult to play Marquise and Braden at the same time for like clutch times because they're both, if they are 6 feet, it's not by much. And Marquise might be a little taller. He might be 6'1", but, overall, like those guys on the court at the same time are going to be tough. And I just like, you know, I love Marquise's game, but I never thought of him as like a game controller on offense. And he was that in this game. Like there, are, of course, like you mentioned, there are times when he drove to the hoop and he didn't seem like he had a plan, but I'm talking about like initiating the offense and like getting the, like you said, rebounds and starting it up or outlet pass to him and he's taking it up and looking to create. I think he's kind of taken that one of those next step forward. For me, and showing that he knows the offense, he's ready to run it. And I honestly, like, we've talked about this, I think, for a little while. I want to see him leading the offense and have Braden more as the, like, shooting guard type. And of course, Braden's going to get his chances to bring up the ball, but Braden is such a great shooter. And I feel like it's kind of being hindered a little bit by the fact that he is the main ball handler. I think they need to find him kind of like they did Clayton Custer in times where there's a play drawn up for Clay to get an open shot or in this case for Braden. Yeah. He's just such a good shooter and I want him to shoot more. Like he was 0-for-3 in this game, but like I don't think he's going to have another 0-for-game the rest of the season, in my opinion.
No, you're absolutely right. I think you and I kind of talked about it off the off the podcast. I was going to say off the screen, but we're not on the screen. But you and I did talk about this, two things, and I agree. We talked about how I'd love to see someone else bring up the ball, and it is Kennedy. I want Kennedy to bring up the ball and see Braden just quickly run off the screen and then back off and hit the three because I think he can. So I do 100% agree with that. I think that'd bring a different dynamic. And then here's the other thing. They could also just play it around. People are like, oh, they're going to pass it to Braden, right? So we're going to jump the pass, right? Well, then you could mess around a little bit and have just – Kennedy drive because you know he can drive, right? So it's a lot of things you could do there. Then you're absolutely right. I think there was a moment there where Braden actually turned it over. And I can't remember if it was the first half or second half. But he had a wide open three, and I knew he should have taken it. But then he kind of hesitated and then drove. And then he just kind of tossed it out, and it became a turnover. And I think I texted you right away because we sadly weren't sitting next to each other. But I said, I am okay with Braden out of all of our players right now to shoot that shot because I still have better confidence, even if he was 0 for 2 at the moment or 0 for 3, that he's going to make a shot. Mm-hmm. And when you're wide open like that, you just got it, especially from the top of the key. He loves those top of the – pretty much just directly top of the key, three-point shot. Like, that's what he's going to make. So I love both those points, and I think it would bring a different dynamic if we have Braden off the ball and moving around. And then if people just got to move. Sorry. That's actually something we haven't talked about. But people just got to move. Some of these whole waiting around the three-point line is just getting a little ridiculous. So I'd love to see people move more and do some slashing and everything. But this game, you saw people just drive more, which is great, but you're kind of all waiting by the three-point line. But I'd love to open up the offense more, and I think we got a lot more to do on offense, which would be great to see. But I'm liking what we're doing, and again, I loved what we did against DePaul. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think another thing, kind of topic we got to talk about is lineups, especially in this one. In the first half, I quite honestly don't understand what Drew was doing. Like, straight up. I like seeing Saint play. Especially if we get a little like stagnant. I like throwing him in there for a couple minutes, see if he can do anything. He's great on the fast break. He's got quick hands. Tom, I played some minutes, didn't quite understand that, if I'm being honest. And Tate only playing 10. You know, I think it's going to happen from time to time. That's not as big of an issue for me, but I would have liked seeing Tate get most of those minutes from Satan Tom. He just like we've mentioned, is such a great rebounder. A couple times when we gave up some offensive rebounds, we did give up 10 offensive rebounds, which is kind of a lot. I just quite honestly, there are some lineups out there. I was like, I don't really understand what we're doing here. I understand Marquise was in foul trouble a little bit, but other than that, there really wasn't anyone in foul trouble. A few of the lineups, I really was just like, I don't know what's going on out here. So that was a little bit of a bummer. But I think Drew figured it out in the second half. We saw, you know, Lucas, like I've said, played 34 minutes. Ahir played 30 minutes. And then after that, you got a few guys, Huddy, Keese, Braden, Schwieger, all playing over 20. Chris Knight played 17. The two Ivy League transfers I thought were pretty good in this game. Schwieger, I thought, was okay. Sometimes I want some more of his shots to go in. Like, he takes some challenging shots, and we know he can make them. Chris Knight, on the other hand, is always taking layups. It says he was 0 for 1 from 3 in this game, and I don't know when that was, because it has to be misgiven to him. I don't remember him taking
three. Who, sir?
So, Chris Knight. It says he was 0 for 1 from 3, which I just – I think they give
no, him. I'm going to have to rewatch this game.
I think they misassigned it. My just like kind of last point about Chris Knight, he's just so efficient. And he's always in the right spot on offense, and he is sometimes not on the right spot on defense. And I think this is where I want you to jump in. But there was one play where he boxed the hell out of his guy. Like, it's not his fault. He boxed his guy out. I think the ball bounced at least twice, if not three times, like 4 feet in front of him. And he just kept boxing out, which, to be fair, sometimes you're taught, like, box out the guards are supposed to rebound down. Like, that's a strategy. But, like, it just looked so silly to see him not go for the ball, and DePaul got an offensive rebound and an easy layup. So, I don't know, Lou, if you want to talk about, like, lineups or Chris Knight, just kind of maybe things he needs to improve on a bit.
Yeah, so quickly, in my opinion with Saint, I just don't think that's the right game and right time to put him in. Now, do I know if he was trying to – I can't remember if Marquise – if Kennedy was on the court when Saint was on the court, that makes no sense. If you were trying to say, oh, hey, I just want a little bit taller of a lineup and potentially just give Kennedy a breather to with these foul trouble, right, that makes sense. But just not the right time and place. Also, he needs to drive more. I need to see him drive. I think with being so tall and lanky, I think he can go up to the rim and do a little finger roll or something, but like, just the threes are just not feeling it yet for me. I know he can make it. I know, but I want to see him drive as well. Rotations, I think you saw Huddy in the beginning and Huddy, but the second half was kind of Chris Knight's show. And then Ryan, I think Ryan, we're just trying to plug in where, when the games he can. Weird game for Ryan, to be honest with you. I think he turned it over a handful of times and then he just, I don't know, his shots weren't going the way he thought they were. I think he backed down a lot of guys. And I think this was a game where maybe you back him down and pass him out. You don't really try to go up, because again, what, 4 of 11 from field goal, not too great. But Chris Knight, he's a genius of a guy, probably, right? He's probably smarter than me. Dartmouth, congrats, right? But you put your two hands when a ball comes to you, and I just want him to jump. I would love to see him jump for a ball. And you don't. He had one rebound in this game. And he could have had two if he just stepped maybe 3 feet ahead of him from one of the best box outs I've seen in recent years from a Loyola Rambler. Like, one of the best. But it's a little bad when the ball is right in front of you and you don't get it. Like, I don't – maybe he was tired. I don't know. I won't know. And I don't care because I'm going to move on about it. But what I do want to see is I got to see him grab some rebounds. I think there are some games where I've seen Braden get a rebound over him. I've seen definitely Marquise Kennedy get a rebound over him. Now Kennedy is definitely an amazing
guy. He gets rebounds over everyone.
Everyone, exactly. So it's maybe a little bit different. But I got to see some more. Just defensive. I'm not even talking about offensive rebounds, right? I'm talking about defensive rebounds. I don't feel confident that he went in there, he'll grab me a defensive rebound. And he'll give up that offensive rebound. Now, will I rewatch the end of the first half where no one decided to box out and then DePaul gets an easy offensive rebound? And then they just put it back up? Yes, because where was the box out there? Where was anybody going? So it's just stuff like that. And I think we've gotten to a point, and it's not just this one game for us to say, and I don't think anyone could really argue that there is just some questionability about his defensive rebounding skill. Offensively, we'll say it again a million times, he's always there in the right place, right time, and he's smart, he's quick, and he's great offensively. But we need to play the other side of the ball too. It's a two-sided game. We can't just call – it might have been the Indiana State game where we had Marquise Kennedy come in and out. When we were on defense, he was out, and then when we were on offense, he was in. Like, that was so much to happen. We can't do that every game. There's not that opportunity. So we're going to need guys to play both sides of the ball. And I think that would – if I just get him to maybe get 4 rebounds a game, defensive rebounds a game, it will change the momentum of the game, and it might just also help – our team overall, because you don't know when those moments where we need a strong defensive rebound. Once you get that stop, right, we just went maybe 20 seconds to get a stop, it's demoralizing if you just give them back the rebound. They get a fresh shot clock and everything if the shot hit rim. So stuff like that, I think, is the biggest thing. And then just with rotation, though, that I don't want to forget to mention is there was just one bad play with Lucas where he got caught, double-teamed at least, and the shot clock went off, right? Mm-hmm. And no one slashed. No one went to the ball. Everyone was standing around the three-point line. And it's like I don't even think it's one rotation or the other. It's like for some reason we were watching a pattern of guys just standing on the three-point line waiting for the ball to be passed around or high screen, right? And then we come around and hand off at the three-point line, and Ryan will take a ridiculous three behind two defenders, and his feet are just going to jump in the midair and spread. But I would love to see guys get to the ball more no matter the rotation. That's the thing. If you see a guy trapped like that, like Lucas was, and with like 3 seconds left on the shot clock, now maybe could Lucas have known it was 3 seconds left? Yes, but he was double-teamed. I'm not really too worried about that, but just something to talk about rotations. But again, Chris and I getting defensive rebounds, I think Buck will really change his game and change the momentum of our team.
I agree. I mean, like, you just need someone to step up in that circumstance. You know, 10 offensive rebounds is too many. And he's got the body for it. Like, we've seen him get up. I know he can get up because he dunks. He's probably had 5 dunks already this season. Like, I know he can. So, speaking of Chris Knight's dunks, that one pass from Lucas all the way up court, Chris Knight is just a thing of beauty. Love that play. Another Chris Knight play, Ryan Schwieger drives. I still to this day or moment don't understand how he got the pass to Chris Knight, but perfect give and go.
I think he had to have gone to Ivy league schools to know how he got the pass to him. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
He must have like changed the volume of the ball like in the past and we just couldn't see it. Like maybe he has some formula and like it phased through the defender or something. It was just, it was that impressive. It was fun to watch. I don't know. I mean, like, there's other stuff I want to talk about the, not necessarily about the actual game, like the actual product on the court. So I don't know if you have like other stuff to talk about, like regarding the actual play on the court.
Play on the court again. I think turnovers the first half was just horrendous. Something very similar even to the Michigan State game. Even though we were leading the first half, we had horrendous turnovers. So just kind of a second game around turnovers that made me concerned. So I'd just like to tighten that up. But again, we did that in the second half. We only had 4 turnovers. So yeah, I think that was the biggest thing for me. And then the team just didn't quit. That's a big thing. Not quitting with the lead, not quitting when down. Two biggest things. They're two different things. When you had the lead and you don't quit, to let the team come back is huge. And then when you don't just let a team run you away with the game, that's also huge. So just team play was just great, especially second half. Just it got everything just got better and cleaner.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was fun to watch them get better as the game went on. So I mean, final score is 68-64. Just like other stuff about the actual atmosphere. It was so fun. Like I, after the game was over, I went to the bathroom and I'm in there, you know, whatever, doing my business. And I hear just from outside, like hundreds of feet away, I can just hear everyone chanting, like, let's go Blurs, LUC, like, just like, Loyola fans screaming and like having the time of their life. Like, man, that was just like such a fun, feeling. You know, I'm walking around, we're walking around the stadium. Every Loyola fan you see, like, let's go Blurs. Like, yes, sir. Our city, all that kind of good stuff. But so my funny story. So I'm walking out trying to get out of the stadium. Well, first of all, trying to find you and some of our other friends. We're walking down the stadium and I think, oh, corner of a building. Usually there's a staircase, right? And like staircase to each floor. Why would they make staircases in a stadium that don't get off at other floors? But for whatever reason, this wasn't the case. So I had to go all the way down and out of the building. And I get outside the building and I'm on the complete like wrong side of the building, which whatever. So start walking around. And as we're walking, there's a couple doors that are like closing. And I see someone coming out. And I kind of peek in, like, as they're closing, and I see both Coach Amara Morgan and Sean Dwyer. And I figure, oh, like, that's either the coaches or the whole team or whatever. So, like, I kind of lean over, and I go, let's go Blurs! And they, you just hear them, like, cheering from the inside. That, and then literally, like, 5 seconds later, someone walks into the locker room, either, like, Drew or the players or something, and just that whole room, like, erupts. And just like, it was so fun. That was like one of my favorite memories for sure. It's just kind of funny, but yeah, it was just, it was a cool, atmosphere. Like Lucas said post game, it felt like just a more important game. And maybe that's the reason why I really thought that this would kind of move the needle a little bit more, like in the eyes of like AP voters and, other pub, you know, national, media people. But it really didn't, which is fine. You know, we're just going to keep proving them wrong. But to me, it felt like a super important game that had more meaning than just a December non-conference game between two top 100 teams. So what other things do you want to talk about, like besides the actual game on the court, like any other fun memories?
Yeah,
or
interest. Yeah. If we do this again, let's have two entrances into the arena. That would be great. I just have never seen just literally, and that's the thing, it wasn't one person slowing up, it was just the fact that they only had one entrance and probably only like 6 security guards, and that's it. There's gotta be another way to get into this arena. I just don't understand how that's the only way. $2 beer night or day, what a joke, but thank God we played great. But overall, just loved the atmosphere of people getting to the game. The Paul fans, it was new for them to have to cheer or even know what a basketball game was like. But I love seeing Ramblers, all different kind of ages, like from young ones to like maybe recently alum to current students. The student section was right above me. Love seeing that packed. Weird. I noticed on Twitter that the dance teams didn't, I get when you realize that they weren't on the court, which makes sense. Maybe they're not on, usually think you would think they could maybe make this game. Mm-hmm. But they were in the stands as a group, which was cool. So overall, just great. It was funny listening to some people got to call them out, but some Loyola fans were like, oh, we played DePaul 5 years ago. And then I was like, oh, we didn't play DePaul 5 years ago, but it's okay. But then hearing people talk about how we play DePaul in soccer all the time and in women's basketball. So like, it was just really cool to hear people talk about, how this should be a thing, right? And how should it be a city thing? And then we can invite people of maybe the county. We can do a Cook County Cup or something like that. But, of the city where we'll, again, tomorrow we play everyone in the city. I believe that everyone who is D1. Yes. And then we can open it up to maybe Cook County. Right. To other teams who might be in that county. So, but again, overall atmosphere is great. Just turning the corner to see the crowd is great. Overall, just excited. Great to see everyone excited at the end of the game. Like you said, the enthusiasm, but even on the court, I think I saw Drew go over to his wife multiple times. Maybe his dad and mom were there. So really cool. I think this was a great game. They both were asked in the press conference, would they like to see this? And they think they both, the DePaul coach, Tony Stubblefield, said yes, and Drew said yes. So really, really, really cool to see. And especially since we were supposed to play this game last year. That's the other thing, right, too. I think people forget. So I'm hoping they renew at Gentile next year. I think Drew even said that would love to get up at Gentile. So I would really like to see it at Gentile next year, especially since I think we brought in such a great crowd. So, yeah, just overall excited about non-gameplay. I think it was just great for the city. Great to see the Tribune yesterday, right? That was great. Let's see that picture. Didn't get a chance to read the article yet, but just overall great to see. It was funny. I think when I associate the Tribune, I'm so used to seeing Shannon Ryan talk about Loyola. So it was nice to see another name that wasn't Shannon Ryan, especially since she's moved on. But, again, overall great to see. And hopefully we can renew this for more times in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you said, everyone was saying, like, this needs to be a yearly thing. It's just such a great thing for the city. Put our top two teams, I mean, most years at least, up there and make it a big deal. You know, make it even bigger. Include the other two teams. Let's get UIC and Chicago State, make it a little weekend tournament, play on a Friday and a Sunday or a Thursday and a Saturday, and let's make it a thing. So, my last thought, is directed at the annoying DePaul fan that was sitting right behind me. And, when we went to shoot free throws, I did the normal Loyola Rambler blurs up, you know, ritual. And every time he said, oh, go Longhorns. And by the fourth, like the end of the second half, 5 minutes left, I had it. I said, no, sir. And I moved my hands. This is how you do Longhorns. This is how you hook them. This is Ramblers. And by that point, we were up 6 or something. And he did not talk to me anymore. And, you know, if I pissed him off, good. You know, like, he's got to understand that there's other things that other teams do that are ritualistic. So, but yeah, to that one guy, go Ramblers, and DePaul sucks. So,
yeah, I think one of my favorite was so many DePaul/Loyola couples. I don't know how that's allowed, but it's okay. It's okay. I think they're doing it out of charity. I think that's what they're doing. It's a nice, like, service. But I had this one couple, boyfriend and his girlfriend. She went to Loyola, or she was going to Loyola. They both had the family there. He wouldn't stop standing for every time we fouled them, not even for the foul shot. Every time we fouled him, he just stood up. Nothing else. He would always stand up. And I just had to say to him, please, just sit down. You can stand up when you make the shot. But let me see what the replay is so I can actually see if it was a good foul or not, which most of the time it probably wasn't, right? But on the way out, I said, oh, why aren't you standing and cheering now? And then he gave me the nice bird. And I said, wow, that's just a DePaul fan for you. The student section was to my left. They gave us a lot of birds. So you know what?
You're collecting cardinals.
You know what? I really am. So, but again, it was fun to tame the demon, to give it – I saw a few signs to give it an exorcism, but – overall, I want this renewed, and I think this is just overall helps. Also, talk about Chicago recruiting. I think you don't see many guys going to either of our schools recently. Maybe I think Bynum recently for them, but really you see guys right now leaving Simeon, leaving Chicago. And I think having Javon Freeman Liberty, even though he went to Valpo, but representing Chicago hoops, just like Lucas, both Whitney Young. I think that was really cool to see as well.
Yeah, it was. It was great. It was a great game. Like I said, final score 68-64. This week, we have two games as well. Unfortunately, one is against Roosevelt, who I don't think they're Division One.
Nope, not Division One, though. No.
Which is unfortunate. And then, so that's Tuesday, 7. And then, is it Friday? I think it's Friday.
Friday evening, yeah, Vanderbilt in Nashville. So if people don't remember, that game is the return. I guess it's a neutral and on home. So we played Vanderbilt last year in Vegas. Was it last year or 2 years ago? 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah, because last year we had a weird non-conference, right? So 2 years ago we played them in Vegas. Yeah, there was no way we were probably playing a team in Vegas last year. So we played them in Vegas and won. So I'm very excited for this game. And again, an SEC opponent, so we've had some good luck with them, and I really like the idea of playing another SEC opponent because we played Auburn this year, and tough game, but I would like to see another win there, another good, hopefully, Q1 win there.
So last thought, last game against Vanderbilt, Cameron Cartwright got a triple-double. Who, if you had to pick, who's getting a triple-double for us in this game?
Marquise Kennedy.
Oh, all right. You're out of here first. Marquise Kennedy, triple-double. No, but in all seriousness, it was a great week to be a Rambler fan. I hope there's more great weeks in the future. But thank you all for listening. And don't forget, always remember, go Blurs.